morning, everyone. My name is Leslie Keller, and I will be your conference operator. Welcome to Mexaren's second quarter 2020 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. There will be a question and answer session after the speaker's remarks, and instructions on how to proceed will be given at that time. Mexaren issued its quarterly report on Monday, July 27th, after the market closed. If you did not receive the report, please contact the investor relations team, and they will email it to you. Please note that this call is for investors and analysts only, and questions from the media will not be taken, nor should the call be reported on. Any forward-looking statements made during this conference call are based on information that is currently available. Please refer to the disclaimer in the earnings release for guidance on this matter. Today, we are joined by Mexaren's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Alejandro Monsó Rosa, and Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Abelardo Loscos, both of whom will discuss the company's performance. Also on the call is Mr. Eduardo Limón, Mexaren's Investor Relations Officer. I will now turn over the call to Mr. Alejandro Monsó. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and welcome to our second quarter 2020 conference call. I would like to start by addressing some of the initiatives that we have in place to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic and the global economic crisis, while we continue to support Mexican SMEs through this uncertain time. In March, we launched Plan Cero, a reconciliation plan to understand the liquidity needs, financial position, and business needs of all of our clients. Negotiations were tailored to each client to be able to support them accordingly. 18% of clients have taken part in the program to adjust their payment schedule, and in most cases, a three-month grace period for monthly payments, and increasing payments for the remainder of 2020 was offered. As a result of this program, collections for 2020 will be down 266 million pesos, representing 14% of total collections forecast for the year. However, in each case, we conducted prudent analysis to ensure that we were managing a liquidity issue and not a solvency one. We expect to recover these shortfalls in collections through higher, longer-term payments agreed over the lifetime of the loan. As we have communicated previously, the health and well-being of our employees, customers, and community is paramount. As such, we have been working remotely, efficiently, and have prepared a plan to gradually return to activities, following the best practices and protocols specified by the relevant authorities. We remain focused on preserving the company's liquidity, as well as strengthening our capitalization and leverage ratios. To that end, we maintained a cash balance of 1.4 billion pesos in the second quarter, which is very similar to the 1.5 billion pesos reported at the end of Q1. We continue to closely monitor our portfolio and collections. Both remain adequate. Notwithstanding the Plan Cero with an NPL increase of 60 basis points to 5.9% of our total loan book in the second quarter. Important to mention, all credits are duly collateralized, either directly through lease equipment or indirectly through mortgage guarantees, pledges, and so on. In most cases, high levels of collateralizations are met, resulting in 1.8x coverage of capital at risk, which ensures that our portfolio remains resilient. In order to maintain the high quality of our portfolio, we only plan to expand our portfolio and client base when the economic conditions are right. We are confident that attractive opportunities will emerge towards the end of the year. The first six months of the year brought with it significant variations in the peso-dollar exchange rate. However, all of our debt in dollars is hedged, both for coupon and principal payments. ensuring stability in the company's cash flow irrespective of the prevailing exchange rate. Abelardo will give more detail on this issue later on. We believe that our debt profile is easily manageable in the current context, with only 13% of our debt maturing in the short term. Of the short-term maturities, a significant proportion corresponds to the Cebures program on the local capital market, which we have participated in for over 10 years now. Over the quarter, we were able to refinance approximately 80% of these maturities, despite the adverse market conditions, demonstrating Mexarent's solid reputation in the Mexican market. Most of our leverage corresponds to the international bond issued in July 2019, which consists of a bullet payment in 2024, which, as mentioned, is fully hedged against changes in the exchange rate. Moving on to our results for the quarter, total revenue increased by 14.2% compared to the same period of 2019. This was less than original plan due to the decision to pause originations during the quarter as a result of the current economic climate and Mexarent's conservative approach to risk. Gross profit decreased by 11% compared to the second quarter of 2019 with a margin of 31%. Despite the decrease related to the freezing of origination, we continue to report sufficiently attractive margins to present solid operating results. Before I hand the call over to Abelardo, I would like to mention one of our other long-term strategies. We continue to make progress with our financing plan for warehousing and bilateral loan agreements, which we expect to be ready by the end of this year. I would like to confirm that as an officially recognized socially responsible company, we remain committed to aligning our business strategy with the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations Global Compact and to supporting our country and our clients in their recoverings from these unprecedented times. In conclusion, despite the enormous challenges we faced in the second quarter, our company and business model remain in good shape. We have preserved high levels of liquidity. We remain well capitalized, with non-performing loans below 6%, and with 18% of our clients receiving some type of support. As the economy recovers, Mexarent will once again grow origination, and levels of profitability and growth will, over time, return to their normal levels. With this, I will now like to turn the call over to Abelardo.
Thank you, Alejandro, and to everyone for joining us today. Moving on to our financials, the first half of the year started well until the COVID crisis hit. As Alex mentioned, second quarter revenues were up by 14.2% compared to the same period in 2019 to 378.1 million pesos. Our cash position for the quarter remains stable compared at 1,462 million pesos, demonstrating the company's ability to manage collections and expenses when compared to the previous quarter. Operating income for the period decreased by 13.2% in the quarter due to the low number of new transactions for this period. On the other hand, operating expenses also decreased by 9.5%, reflecting the cost controls and the drop in commissions related to the pause in origination of new transactions. Gross profit for the first half decreased by 12.3% compared to the same period in 2019 to 248 million pesos with a margin of 32.5%. Operating results for the quarter follow the same trajectory, with a decrease of 11% to 118.5 million and a margin of 31.3%. Over the quarter, earnings were impacted by the pause in originations and related events in three ways. First, a reduction in commissions generated when registering new transactions. Second, a lower income from the financial operating margin. And third, a reduction in income from operating lease operations that are part of the Plan Zero. In the second quarter, there was a net loss of 15.5 million pesos, a result of lower operating earnings and the impact of the negative carry of the low yield of high cash levels on the comprehensive financing result. At the accumulated level at the end of June, there was a net profit of 6.6 million. There was an increase in the comprehensive financing result of 20.3% in the first 6 months of the year. Financial debt decreased by 562 million pesos in the quarter and increased by 3,708 million in comparison to the period ending in June 2019. A large part of this variation is due to exchange rate fluctuation. With all our dollar-denominated debt hedge, if we ignore the effect of exchange rate for the period, there was a decrease in debt of 160.2 million in the quarter due to the natural amortizations of our financial debt. By comparison, for the period ending in June last year, debt was 2,240 million. The variation versus June 2019 reflects the proceeds from the international bond that was issued in July 2019. There continues to be a negative effect on capital in the other comprehensive income account due to changes in the exchange rate and the valuation of financial derivative instruments adjusted for the value of premiums of 375 million. However, the effect is less than 556 million pesos reported in the first quarter of 2020 due to the appreciation of the exchange rate in the quarter. The total portfolio reached almost 9 billion pesos, an increase of 21.3%, reflecting the rollover of existing leases and previous originations. The consumer goods manufacturing sector continued to represent the majority of our portfolio at 38%, with the industrial sector not far behind at 33%. The majority of our portfolio continues to be based in Mexico City and the State of Mexico, with 68% of clients split equally across the two regions. The remaining 32% comes from a combination of other states, underlining our geographic diversity. Total assets at the end of June were 11,386 million pesos, compared to just over 8 billion pesos for the same period in 2019. This represents a 42% increase, which is largely due to the cash proceeds from the bond issuance in July 2019, the growth of the portfolio, and the revaluation of our derivative instruments used for hedging. If we isolate the effect of the valuation of our derivative instruments, the increase would have amounted to 32%. Total liabilities increased by 57% compared to the end of June 2019, reaching 10,247 million pesos. This is mainly in long-term debt related to the issuance of the international bond, as well as impact of variations in foreign exchange rates. As you will be aware, at the end of the first quarter and the beginning of second quarter 2020, S&P, Moody's, and Fitch Ratings agencies lowered Mexico's long-term global sovereign ratings in foreign and local currency due to the expected impact of COVID-19 on the country and the resulting global uncertainty and fall in oil prices. As a result of the above, the ratings of the country's financial institutions were adjusted down. This was also reflected in the Mexican rating, which dropped from BB- to B+ with Fitch Ratings and to B with S&P. However, HR Ratings ratified the rating of HRA with a stable outlook for Mexarrend. This was due to the adequate performance and growth of the leasing portfolio in the last year, as well as the one-off nature of the impacts on capitalization and profitability as a result of the bond issuance in July 2019, which did not represent a cash outflow for the company. This concludes my remarks. Thank you all for listening. I am now going to hand the call back to operator for the Q&A.
We will now start the Q&A session. If you have a question, please enter star eight on your telephone. In case your question has been answered, you may cancel it by pressing star eight again. The first question is from Mr. Adrian Garcia from Invesco. Please go ahead.
Sure. Good morning, Alejandro and Abelardo. Thank you very much for the call. My question regards the relief program that you talked about at the beginning of the call. Can you reiterate that it's 80% of the portfolio is taking advantage of this, and the form of this relief program is via allowing clients not to pay for 3 months. Related to that, my question is, so if clients are not paying for 3 months, what is the treatment that you're giving these clients in terms of performing versus non-performing? Are you moving these into an NPL account, given that that's 90 days without payment?
Okay. Hello, Adrian. Thank you. Well, first of all, it was not 80%. It was 18%, 1-8.
Okay.
This is very important. Yeah, it's 18%. And in the program, as you mentioned, basically consists in giving a sort of a grace period or a reduction in payments for the next for the first 3 months, and then steadily go back to normal for the remainder of the year. As these transactions were agreed when all of these clients were paying on time, and it was a mutually agreement. We are not considering these NPLs. These are not part. This is not part of our NPL portfolio. And also important to mention, a portion of these 18%, which start taking the relief in April, for instance, are already coming back and paying in July. So we are starting to see the performance of these clients. And in the vast majority of the cases, what we are seeing is that. This was really a liquidity situation rather than a solvency one. So far we are happy with the results. Of course, we are very vigilant of how the market is going to continue performing.
So as you mentioned, this program started in April. So they didn't make payments April, May, and June. So July they should have already making payment. You mentioned that a portion of these guys are coming back and making their payment. Can you tell us what are you doing with the portion that are not making the payments? Are you granting them additional extensions, or how do you intend to handle the guys who already used the 3 months and are coming back and saying they still cannot pay?
Sure. Well, first, not all the clients start their relief program in April. Many of them did it in June, or some even in July, because they had some cash reserves and they actually paid in April and May in the regular payment schedule. It's important to mention as well. For those that started in April and were due to pay in July, as I mentioned, the vast majority is paying. The portion that is not, we are looking at those particular credits or industries independently, directly, meeting with them. Our workout teams are meeting with them, understanding the situation. We are basically going to make decisions based on each individual company. If, again, we see that it is just a consequence of a particular industry taking longer to activate themselves just due to the COVID pandemic, we may give them additional support. If we see that this is something that goes more into a solvency situation, we'll try to get our asset back. Our collateral back, monetize those, and finalize the transaction at the quickest and most efficient possible way.
Okay. And some of your competitors, what they have been doing as well is they have been extending the life of the contract, but at the same time, they have been asking for additional collateral. Is that something that you're doing as well in terms of asking a higher collateral package?
Absolutely, and as I mentioned, we met with every single one of our clients. So in those cases when we felt that our collateral situation was deteriorating just by virtue of extending the tenure of the lease, we requested additional collateral, and that was part of the agreement for the deferral of payments. So yes, I mean, for us as an asset-based lender, having a collateral surplus in place, adequate collateral supply, especially in these times, is extremely important. So yes, the answer is absolutely yes.
All right. Thank you. I'll put myself back in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your question. As a reminder, if you have a question, please enter star 8 on your telephone. In case your question has been answered, you may cancel it by pressing star 8 again. The next question comes from Ms. Maria Cruz from Seminario. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Alejandro and Abelardo. I have a follow-up on question of NPLs that have recently been asked. I don't understand if these loans under the relief program are indeed included in the non-performing loans range. And I have after that an additional question about the debt, the total debt that you have.
Okay, answering your first question, no. I mean, those credits that the deferral of payment was agreed when the company was paying on time is not included in our NPL portfolio or in our NPL ratio.
Okay, and what happened with, for example, if the client only pays like 10% of the total amount, what happened with the 90%? Additional amount that they're not paying. Is this credit still included as performing one as long as it pays?
No.
If 10%, no.
No, they have to pay everything that was agreed in the deferral or in the new agreement that we signed in the deferral payment program, the Plan Cero that we launched. If they are compliant with the Plan Cero that they signed, then it's a current loan for us. If they do not comply with that new schedule of payments, then they'll become an NPL when the time comes.
Okay. So are you having just like one relief program? Or for example, if a client doesn't pay like in the 3 months deferral that you planned, are you taking like another extra program or it's just 3 months?
We're just getting to the, let's say, the end of the first program for the first clients to sign that started in April. So basically, they are starting to pay this month, July. What we are seeing is that the vast majority of the clients are paying according with the new terms. There is a number of clients that are coming back requesting additional support just by virtue of a particular situation of the industry. We are analyzing those situations one-on-one to understand, again, if it's just a temporal liquidity situation, how it's our collateral position, and depending on a number of situations, we may decide to extend additional support, or if we believe this is a solvency situation, we will try to get our collateral back, monetize that, and finalize the transaction. But again, I think in a situation like this in the market, like the one we're seeing, it's extremely important to understand each particular transaction in their own, with their own particulars and their own situations, to make the right choices as often as possible.
Okay, thank you. And what about, for example, in the hypothetical case that this loan is like been extended twice? Are these the second time that this loan is under this relief program? Are you considering as NPL or you haven't really like picture this scenario yet?
We haven't pictured that scenario yet because again, we are, it's just the first month, the first payment coming due after the first deferral agreement. So we want to wait and see how the situation goes. So far, we are optimistic. We are seeing a very good performance of the portfolio that took advantage of the program. And so far, it's good news. But again, I mean, it depends on how the market performs. If the Mexican economy continues the reopening trend that's been happening for the past month or so, and I guess we've got to take it from there.
Okay. For example, it's correct to say that 18% of the loans that were under the relief program were granted with 3 months deferral, or are they,
yes,
for example, granted with 6 months deferral, or what?
It was the longest deferral that we granted were 3 months.
Okay.
So yes, and that's pretty much across the board. So yeah, that's fair to say.
Okay, and I want to understand, for example, the base scenario that your base scenario includes to recover the asset, or what time are you going to expect for the asset to get back to you if the client doesn't pay?
Yeah, I mean, if the client doesn't pay as an asset-based lender, obviously the next step is to try to get your collateral back, meaning the asset that we own and the boot collateral that we have. As I mentioned in my initial remarks, in most of our transactions, we have not only the asset that it's under lease, but we also have boot collateral in the form of additional pledges, mortgage back, stuff like that enhances the quality of our portfolio. So if the time comes and we clearly we will recover the assets, and we feel very confident with that our asset management team will be very efficient in monetizing those assets if the time comes.
Okay. This my second question is regarding your total debt. I've seen that it's reduced quarter over quarter. I want to know what amount of unused lines do you have at the time, and I want to know, for example, you said that you are going to recover or your origination as long as the economy recovers, but for example, could we expect this to happen maybe by year end, or are you expecting this to happen maybe the first half of second year?
I'm going to take the second question first. I think this is going to be a gradual situation, and it's going to be more of we will be looking and making decisions based on the global and Mexican economic situation. My base case today is that we should start seeing an improvement in origination by the end of the year, probably in the last quarter of the year, and continuing for the next year. But again, I mean, this is all based on the assumption that the reopening of the Mexican economy will continue to go on as planned, and there is some uncertainty in that regard. So provided that this happens and that the global economy continues the reopening trend, we believe that we should be seeing a recovery, a strong recovery in new originations by the end of the year. But again, I mean, that's dependent on the economy performance. And talking about our debt, we have a number of bilateral credit lines that are open and that we could draw. However, I mean, clearly we are not doing that. As you've seen in our balance sheet, we are seeing in a lot of cash. I mean, it's a conscious decision to have that much cash in our balance sheet because it provides flexibility when we are talking with clients. It provides flexibility just to make strategic decisions in this scenario. But again, I mean, when the time comes and origination starts, we feel comfortable that we should be able to tap our credit lines. And as I mentioned also in my initial remarks, we are very well advanced in our warehouse facilities that we expect to have by the end of the year. And as I've mentioned in other calls, this is the funding strategy that the company is pursuing, having this warehouse facility to eliminate the need to maintain that much cash in our balance sheet and be able to have a more efficient capital structure, and therefore reduce our negative carry and improve our profitability in the coming months and years.
Okay, can you say like a amount of debt that it's open for you to use?
For the moment, of the lines that we have secure is around 100 million pesos is what we have as of today, but we are working obviously on other financing lines that are much bigger for the origination to come by the end of the year and be prepared for 2021.
So it's 100 million pesos, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. My last question is about the capital injection. You said that you have the option by your shareholders to inject capital. Do you have any update on that, or what is your base scenario?
Yeah, our board is continues to analyze the option. As I've mentioned, they are very supportive of the company. They see great opportunity for the company to come out strong from this situation. So I feel confident that something may happen. However, again, as I've mentioned previously, it's an option of the shareholders, but we feel confident that something may come in the near future.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your question. Our next question is from Mr. Adrian Garcia from Invesco. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks again. My question relates about the liquidity and upcoming amortizations. If I'm reading this correctly, you have at least, I think, 1.1 billion pesos of debt within 1 year, right? I think you also mentioned that you were able to roll over about 8% of the Cebures debt. So I'm curious how much, also what is it that you still have left for the rest of the years in terms of short-term debt, and how do you plan to address that? And that's my first question.
Yes, Adrian, as we have mentioned, of the maturity that we have on the short term, most of it is on the Cebures program that, as Alex mentioned, we have been able to roll over almost 80%, considering that they were on the quarter with a higher volatility. So we, as the base of clients that we have, of investors that we have there, have been with the company for a long time, so we expect that to keep working. And the rest of the maturities are basically normal amortizations of the other credit lines that we have.
I'm curious, in terms of that 80% rollover that you did over the Cebures, was that increased at a premium to the previous debt? Are investors demanding higher rates?
No, actually, what we were able to do it at TIIE plus 200 basis, so that was the level that we have been rollovering that debt.
However, as Alvaro mentioned, we rollover that at TIIE plus 200, but TIIE has seen a significant decrease, basically 200 basis points in the past month or so. So total rate, you know, nominal terms, it was a reduction of cost for us.
And the thing, as we have discussed, Adrian, also in previous calls and in other meetings that we have had, we are working obviously in a financial strategy in order to have different options. One is the warehousing. We are also working on bilateral lines and other lines with local banks. So we are seeing different type of options that we are moving forward. And obviously, as we have very good liquidity position as of today in the balance sheet, we are expecting this more for the end of the third quarter, the fourth quarter of the year.
Perfect, thank you. And finally, for me, it would be, I noticed the cash position has been very healthy and relatively stable from last quarter, at 1.4 billion you mentioned. I'm curious if you can provide us a little bit of color into how much you originated and how much you collected to be able to maintain this cash balance.
We may send you some information in that regard later on, but the truth of the matter is origination has been low for the quarter. I guess less than 100 million pesos of origination for the queue. And collections, the remaining piece of our portfolio is performing in line with historical levels, other than the ones that received the support on the Plan Cero. So with all those two things together have helped us maintain the liquidity post a reduction in our total debt, and basically maintain the strong balance sheet that we are showing this Q.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you very much for your question. As a reminder, if you have a question, please enter *8 on your telephone now. Our next question is from Mr. Nicolas Riva from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks very much for taking my question. I have only one question. About the coverage of your NPLs and also loan loss provisions. I mean, in the quarter, you barely increased loan loss, which was quite flat at 50% of NPLs. I understand you're an asset-based lender, as you said. You have the collateral behind the loans. But if you can explain to us why you didn't think it was appropriate to increase coverage of NPLs, given also that I would assume that the collateral behind your leases is going to have a lower market value in the secondary market if you want to monetize that at this time. Thanks.
Hi, Nicolas. Thank you. Yes. First, yes, as you mentioned, we are an asset-based lender. And it's very important to mention that the way we collateralize our transactions, it's in two levels. One is the asset itself that we own, and it's sitting in our balance sheet. And on top of that, we, in most of the cases, we get additional collateral in the form of a pledge of additional assets, or in many, many cases, in particular transactions that are on the large side for us, we get a mortgage. So based on that, our typical collateralization is around 1.8 times. So based on that, our historical recovery ratios have been very high. As you've seen in the package that we sent to the market, the severity of our NPLs typically are under 20%, meaning out of every peso that goes into NPL, less than 20 cents ever become a write-off, meaning that over time we are able to collect the assets and monetize the assets in a way that we recover a very significant portion, and in most of the cases, 100% of our capital at risk. When this whole situation started, we've made a very deep through analysis of our collateral position in 100% of our portfolio, just to make sure that we are well collateralized, even in a scenario where market value or secondary market value of the assets decreases. We so far believe that we continue to be very well collateralized. As a matter of fact, we did recover and monetize a few assets over the queue, and I'm happy to report that we were able to not only monetize recover those assets, to actually monetize those assets during the queue. So again, I mean, I believe that to call yourself an asset-based lender, this is the time where you can prove yourself to be one. And I think we are very good at this. We are very good at recovering assets and at monetizing assets. And just to finalize this, at the we believe that our provision for NPLs is adequate. However, we'll continue to monitor that. And if we believe at some point we need to increase the level at which we are reserving, we'll definitely do so and communicate that to the market. But at this point, we believe that we are adequately covered for our NPL portfolio.
Okay, yes. Thanks very much for that, Alejandro. I guess my only point is that you said that 18% of your lease portfolio has been subject to some kind of relief measures like deferring lease payments for about 3 months. Those restructured loans, that 18% of your lease portfolio is still part of your performing loans. Therefore, I would have expected probably for coverage of NPLs to increase in the quarter, given that you know that you are kind of understating the NPLs that you have. That was kind of my point. Even though I understand that you have, you know, other collateral and personal guarantees also on the leases, but I would have probably expected that coverage to increase given this 18% that is still part of performing leases.
Yeah, and you know, Nicolas, something that we tried to do was we wanted to wait and see what happened with the first transactions that we grant support, and this we are seeing this in July, and we'll see this in the coming months. But so far, the performance has been strong. So far, everything points to the fact that most of the clients were going through a liquidity situation rather than a solvency situation. Again, if we start seeing that this changes, we'll need to obviously address this, and this will impact our NPLs, and we'll need to impact our reserves as well.
Thanks very much, Alejandro.
Thank you.
For your question. As a reminder, if you have a question, please enter *8 on your telephone now. Our next question comes from Carlos Rivera from Double Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of color in terms of the NPL ratio. What is the criteria? Why is it increasing when you have the option or the company has the option to request the support of these delayed programs? Is the increase mostly driven by cases that you think is a solvency issue and you are the ones who are not granting these programs? Or is this people that just fell through and just stopped making payments? And in that same line, what is your expectation for NPLs for the next quarters? You think the 5.7 or the high fives that we saw already is the peak, or do you think this will continue to deteriorate in the coming quarters? Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. Sure. Yes, I mean, the increase of 60 basis points that we saw over the quarter, it's linked to credits that after the analysis that we performed, we decided that the situation was more of a solvency situation rather than a liquidity situation. So as I mentioned, we went case by case, analyzed case by case, and we then just granted the plan zero across the board. I mean, we did our homework and just make sure that it was a liquidity situation. So this 60% in 60 basis points increase has to do with clients that will leave and not going to make it. So we'd rather take the hit and start the process of recovering the asset and try to monetize it as quickly as possible. In terms of my expectation, I believe that if the economy trend continues in as we are seeing it, meaning the reopening of the Mexican economy and global economy continues in the same trends, I believe that in the coming quarters we should see an improvement in overall economic activity. However, there's always the chance that COVID cases increases and health authorities require additional lockdown measures either in Mexico or in the U.S. As you know, Mexico is extremely linked to the U.S. economic activity. So I think if an additional lockdown takes place, this will definitely have a negative effect in our portfolio. But at this point, I guess my base case is that, and my hopeful case is that the COVID situation continues in the right track. So we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. What is the trend of the NPL ratio just based on the aging bucket, like they say the 30 to 60 or 60 below 90 days, based just on that, even if the economy continues to reopen, will that translate into a material increase in the third quarter, let's say, or that one has stabilized?
I'm sorry, Carlos. I mean, we didn't hear you, right? There was a lot of a noise in the background. Could you repeat your question, please?
Oh, sure. So just for the NPL ratio for the third quarter, based on the aging buckets, let's say 30 to 60 days or something, how is that behaving? Do you expect that to bring significant increases in NPLs for the third quarter, or that is behaving well?
Got it. Yes. We've been monitoring the piece of our portfolio that didn't get any support. We are closely monitoring the payment behavior, meaning how many clients pay, which percentage of our portfolio pays on the precise day, which percentage of our portfolio pays in the first 30 days, and so on and so forth. So far, what we are seeing is that dynamic continues to be in track with historic levels. And I think probably it has to do with the fact that the clients, that those clients didn't accept or didn't want to get into the relief program, meaning that they have enough reserves, or their businesses did manage to continue to have some activity. So I don't expect a sharp movement of accounts to go over 90 days in the third quarter, unless there is some, macro situation that causes that.
Okay. Now that you mentioned again the support program, how are the new requests, let's say the requests that you saw in June and so far in July, how are they comparing versus April or May? Are they coming down? Do you start to see like a second wave of people requiring support? Are they coming down?
Yes, we haven't seen a second wave. What we've seen is out of the clients that were to start paying on July, we saw a small number of them that actually came back and request additional support, as I mentioned previously. But we haven't seen a new wave of, meaning those clients that didn't request didn't get the support in the first wave, basically, or in last quarter. We haven't seen a significant number of them coming to us now and asking for support. So again, I believe that has to do with the economic activity improving, slowly improving, in particular the economic activity linked to exports. I don't know if you saw, but the exports in last month were really high in Mexico, so that has a very positive impact with a portion of our portfolio, particularly, transportation of merchandise and stuff like that. So we are starting to see some activity there. And yes, I mean, so far we haven't seen a second wave of requests. So hopefully this will continue this way.
Okay. And the last question for me, a follow-up kind of on the answer to Nicolas' question about the repossession and the sale of the assets in the secondary market. Were you referring to the leased asset, or did you have to go and exercise maybe the second guarantee that you have, and maybe instead of selling productive like equipment or machinery, you had to go and go for the real estate collateral?
So far, we've been able, and again, we haven't seen a huge number of repossessions, but so far we've been able to make call, to be okay with the asset itself. But again, going forward, if the number of clients return equipment, not only to us, but to many other participants in the market, were to increase, we could expect a drop in price in the secondary market. And if that's the case, we need to go for the boot collateral to be able to recover our equity. But I mean, so far, at least the cases that we've seen in the past queue, we didn't have to go for the boot collateral. We were able to make hold with the asset itself.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alejandro and Abelardo, for the answers.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you very much for your question. That was the last question. I will now hand over to Mr. Abelardo Loscos for final comments. Please go ahead.
Thank you all for joining us today. Please reach out to us if you have any additional questions or concerns. We appreciate your interest in Mexarent and look forward to speaking with you again soon. Thank you.
That concludes today's call. You may now disconnect.